Now, here's your host, Mark Moses.
Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed to hour number two of the Mark Moses Show. Let's go to Tampa, Florida. Let's talk to this gentleman. I know he's excited today after his Buccaneers destroyed the Eagles on Super Wild Card Weekend. Luke Easterling, Athlon Sports. How you doing, buddy?
How are you?
How big of a win was? Hey, how big was that last night?
I mean, I think a lot of Bucs fans will be honest and say that they still were. It was kind of like the Super Bowl a few years ago, where you know you have Patrick Mahomes on the other side, so you know that you're not safe yet. And I feel like until the Chris Godwin, you know, Baker Mayfield heat check touchdown there, where he just chucked it up and felt he was feeling dangerous on that one. That's when I think Bucs fans can finally realize, hey, this is happening. This ass kicking that we're putting on the Eagles is real life.
Was that their best complete game, offense, defense, special teams, last night for the season?
You too, thanks. You know, I think that it was. It reminded me a lot of the Green Bay game, where they went into Green Bay and had a very complete performance as well. And then, you know, you obviously put the stakes on it and the playoffs and all the things that go along with it. The crowd was phenomenal. Love to see my city represent itself so well with the home crowd on national television in prime time. Just an incredible performance all the way around. The coaching, the games that were called, the play calling, the scheme. You can see they put a lot of effort into it all week. Todd Bowles and his staff, and then Dave Canales on the other side. Just, I really was, I think, the most complete, masterful performance on all sides, and they needed it. It was the perfect time for it.
It takes two to tango. So, how bad were the Eagles last night?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, right? And that's, if you watch the national media right now today, that's all they want to talk about, right? It's the fact that, oh, well, you know, yeah, the Bucs handled their business, but they did it because, you know, the Eagles are so bad and they're imploding, and that's, you know, they'll want to point to that as the biggest reason why these things happen. But, you know, you got to take advantage of those opportunities,
yes,
too. You know, I mean, when you're presented with a team that's playing poorly, you can't let them hang around. And it felt like the Bucs were doing that a little too much, right? I mean, the game was 16-9 for way too long. Even when it was 25-9, those of us who have been watching this team for a long, long time are like, well, it's still just two scores. And, you know, when all those opportunities kept presenting themselves for the Eagles, you know, the offsides on the extra point, and then they get a chance, and you're thinking, oh, here comes the brotherly shove, and they're going to get the 2 points, and then that doesn't happen. And then they take the field goal off the board in the second half and go for it on fourth down, and they don't get that. And so, you know, there were so many things. And again, it's not like I'm discounting what's happening in Philly, because they are dysfunctional. They've got some stuff going on. But the Bucs did their job. Their job is to not let up. Their job is to take a team that was floundering, that was trying to find their mojo, and saying, not today. You're not going to find it here. We're not going to be your get-right game. You're not going to figure it out tonight. We're gonna step on your throat, basically, and continue to throw things at you that are going to make you kind of dig that hole a little deeper, and that's what we saw. That's what good teams do.
We had Luke Easterling with Athlon Sports talking Buccaneers victory Tuesday. I did not expect this, but here we are. You brought up a great point. The Buccaneers capitalized. There were times that Philly secondary, they're just standing around, not even trying to tackle people. And Bucs are like, okay, fine. We'll just go and score. Dude, I've watched this team all season like you. I've never seen big plays like this for four quarters. It's still shocking what happened last night. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, you know, I think they had a good shot to win. You know,
yeah.
I thought it was – I definitely thought that the matchup played to – their strengths, and I thought they would have opportunities. And then again, it was all about just avoiding mental mistakes. And let's be honest, the Bucs did not play a perfect game.
No.
The Bucs had like six or seven bad drops. They had, I mean, they left at least 13 points on the board, if not more. And again, if they don't give up a couple of big plays there, they really, you know, played a more complete game on defense. But I mean, there was a lot of meat left on the bone by Tampa Bay as well. But yeah, it wasn't a shock to me that they won. It's just, you know, obviously I watch the Bucs a bit closer than I do Philly, and you know, I see them on red zone, and I'd seen their struggles to a certain extent. But man, I mean, I think that team last night, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, really on both sides, they played like a team who had no confidence in their preparation. They played like a team that had no faith in the coaching staff and whatever the game plan was and the scheme or and listening to Jalen Hurts' comments afterwards, you know, speaking about identity being part of the issue. Like, that's a team that does not believe in itself, that does not believe in their leadership, does not believe in what they were executing out on the field. And you just saw no adjustments. It reminded me a lot of what we saw defensively from Dallas in the Green Bay game, where Dallas is walking up there in you know, nickel and dime, these really skinny formations, and Green Bay's lining up in power and just running the ball right at them. It's like, what do you expect? There was no adjustment. And again, I really do think that both Dave Canales and Todd Bowles did a great job on both sides of the ball, keeping the Eagles on their toes. I think the prime example was the play where they ended up in a safety, where all night he's been bringing pressure on third down, on every play, really. But all night, Todd Bowles is bringing pressure. You're backed up. You got third and long deep in your territory, right on the edge of the goal line. And what does Todd Bowles do? He brings everybody up to the line, and he bails them all out at the last second and confuses Hurts. He was expecting pressure, looking for something quick, and you end up scrambling. You end up with the safety. So, I mean, again, just the timing was everything. And the Bucks. I mean, again, there's no other way to put it. They whooped them.
They really did. And I want to clarify this. I asked that question at the top, you know, complete game. Offense, defense, special teams were better. That's how I look at complete game. But I'm with you, though, from last night. There were drops in that first half. This could have been over in the second quarter. Did that concern you? Okay, what's going on here? Why are we not catching the ball in the first half?
Oh, yeah, it was a huge concern because, like I said, the game was 16-9.
Yeah.
For way too long, and when you were looking at that, you know, they're going to have a chance to score, and then they're going to give, you know, they're going to get the ball back at the beginning of the third quarter, and so all these different things that kept Philly in the game, and it just felt like the Bucks weren't going to be able to have that dagger moment where they're going to be able to put the game away. And I mean, again, kudos to the defense for keeping them in it long enough to get that moment.
The
touchdown to Trey Palmer, I felt like was really that moment, you know. And again, I know it was two scores at that point, but Philly was struggling so badly on offense. And again, the Bucks did all the fundamental things that the Eagles did not, for, you know, namely tackling the guy with the football. You know, how many times did an Eagles player get the ball in space with some room to work? And immediately there's three or four pewter hats around him, not a lot of yards after contact, not a lot of missed tackles. Again, I just think from a personnel standpoint, what Todd Bowles did last night, go back and look at the film, see how many different ways he lined up the entire defense. Zion McCollum is like a third corner, slot corner. He played free safety for most of that game. They pressured so much that they basically rolled him down out of the free safety spot and had him one-on-one on Devontae Smith. I know he gave up a couple of big ones, but the personnel that he used, he was dropping Vita Vea into coverage. He had Yaya Diaby, an edge defender, lining up at middle linebacker and then rushing late with Lavonte David on the edge. I mean, it was just, if I was a quarterback looking at that, I just, again, with no confidence in my own game plan, evidently,
no.
What Todd Bowles rolled out last night was absolutely diabolical from a scheme standpoint.
We talked last week, Luke Easterling, about Tristan Wirfs saying something post-game where the offense mm-hmm. has to play better. I think that really set the tone a week out. Do you feel like the offense finally answered, okay, we need to step up, especially how they played over the last couple weeks of the season?
Yeah, they really did, man. And again, I think it was a great game plan, great execution, again, outside of the drops. But they had some really big runs, not like the 20, 30, 40 yarders, but, you know, 8 yards here, 7 yards here, 9 yards here, where Rashad White is breaking tackles, falling forward. Even Chase Edmonds had a couple of nice plays. Baker got outside the pocket and ran for a couple of key first downs, I think. But I think one of the things that surprised me, I was just talking through this with my brother on the phone earlier today, one guy that I think everybody forgot about, go back to last year's NFC title game. Who wrecked that game? Who injured Brock Purdy because they could not block him all night long? Hassan Reddick. Did you hear his name called one time last night?
Mm-mm. No.
Not at all.
No.
So, I mean, kudos to Wirfs. Kudos to Luke Gedecky on the right side. Everybody, it was a team effort, but there were guys on the defensive front who should have had an impact last night, and they just got erased.
Baker Mayfield looked like he was the $50 million quarterback last night. He really did. What'd you think of his performance?
Well, I think he did a great job of overcoming the drops, right? It's really hard when you're a quarterback and you know you're on, because he was putting the ball on the money. I know he had a couple of iffy ones, could have been picked, couple of misses here and there, but for the most part, I mean, he was really dead on. And so when you're slinging it and you're you know, you got the drop to Mike on the deep touchdown. I know they scored not too long after that, but that one hurts. The Cade Otten had a couple, one that would have been a touchdown, and then another one where he was wide open going down the middle and dropped it. I mean, it's hard not to lose confidence, even subconsciously, in your guys when those sorts of things are happening. And he just kept going back to him over and over. He didn't lose confidence. He would shake it off and just move right on. And I think that's why, if you looked at his numbers, you know, almost at halftime, he had some yardage because they had a couple of the big, you know, yards after catch plays, but the completion percentage was terrible, and it would have been easy to say, oh, he's not having a great game. And then you look at it by the end of the game, I mean, he got in such a zone and was hitting everything. And so when you look at the final line, again, I think it was 22 of 36. The completion percentage wasn't great, but again, the first Bucks quarterback threw 303 TDs and no picks in a playoff game. I mean, can't say enough about the way he just fought through it and kept going.
He took some hits in this game, like you're saying. He really did. Third down, he was getting crushed, and he stuck with it. He really did. I wish I could have heard the conversation with your brother. You two must have been so excited on the phone. I can only imagine.
Yeah, well, I got a big family, man. There's a bunch of us. So our text thread when these games are happening is just like rapid fire with my parents are in there and everything. So, yeah, we have a lot of fun, especially on those sorts of days. And when it's not so great, we're able to commiserate. It's awesome.
Big win. But now you go to Detroit. You played them earlier in the year. You lost 20-6. What do you think of this matchup now?
You know, I think obviously the easy money is on Detroit, the way they're playing right now. And again, if you go back to that game earlier in the season, they definitely they dominated most of that game. I think it was 20-6, but the Bucks were just never really in it. And a lot of that was on the offense. I mean, the Lions had a couple of big plays, but I thought the defense, for the most part, played pretty well. But the offense just couldn't do anything. They couldn't move the ball. And I think, the way they finished the season, especially this game, the Green Bay game, they've shown that they can move the ball in spurts. And I think there are some gaps to exploit in that Detroit defense, especially if they can protect. Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson is a game wrecker. But there's some yards to be had in the back seven there in those intermediate and maybe deep down the field. So if they can protect, run the ball enough. The Bucs have yet to run the ball well all season. But if they can run it well enough and get enough going in that ground game, set up some play-action stuff, and take advantage of the middle of the field with some good shots, and again, protect the quarterback enough to give Baker time to throw. You know, I really feel like if they can stop the run, get some pressure on Jared Goff, this could be a game. I wouldn't expect the Bucs to just roll up into Detroit with that crowd and the way they're going to be hyped for the chance to go to the NFC title game. It's going to be a tough thing to overcome. But matchup-wise, I think the Bucs really have a real shot here.
You know, there's a scenario where the Bucs could still host the NFC Championship game, right?
Yeah, that's another thing my brother brought up. He's like, man, how crazy would it be to have a reverse of the 2020 NFC title game, right? It'll be Green Bay and Tampa Bay again, but it would be a Ray J. I mean, I think any Bucs fan would sign up for that right now.
You know what's weird? The Tampa Bay going to Green Bay at the end of the season, winning that game, that game was not nationally televised. It was buried against these other games. Did you think at that time these might be the two hottest teams in the NFC? What?
No. I mean, I loved seeing that from the Bucks, but I understood why everybody was still doubting them. And then Green Bay, both teams had to have that game, right? That was the Green Bay needed that game as much as the Bucks did at that point in the season. So that loss for them was crushing, right? It was like, man, felt like this was a measuring stick game, and we just got our butts handed to us at home, particularly on defense. Yeah, that could have been a really demoralizing moment for them, but the way they've bounced back is just as impressive. I would not have pegged these two teams as the two teams maybe you really don't want to play right now.
All right, explain the season for the Buccaneers, Luke. We've done this all year. So you start 3-1, then you're awful, and you enter December, I think at 4-7. Then you go 5-1 down the stretch, then you beat the Eagles. It's been a roller coaster. Maybe that's the best way to describe it. What about you?
It has been a roller coaster, and again, I really just think it speaks to the resilience of the team and the inability to buy into everybody's narrative. You know how adamant I was that this team just was not going to suck this year. I didn't think they'd be great, but I just didn't see them being as bad as everybody thought they would be. And that belief was always the case within that front office, the general manager, Jason Light, on down. Everything they did in the offseason and everything they didn't do. Remember, everybody thought it was time to blow it up. They're going to trade Mike Evans. They're going to, you know, rebuild because they got all this dead cap money. And what did they do? They said, no, I don't think so. I think we play in a very winnable division. I think we're going to eat all this dead cap. We're going to play a lot of young players. We're going to spend $4 million on Baker Mayfield, which he's going to be double that, by the way, by the time he earns all these incentives. He got another $250,000 just for winning that game and $1 million just for winning the division. But still a bargain. So they did all these things to say, listen, I think we can get in under the tag here. I think we can eat all that dead cap money. Almost $80 million, by the way. Almost $80 million of their salary cap this season was being spent on players who did not play for their team. And that's not counting Ryan Jensen and Russell Gage, who were on the payroll but on injured reserve all year and didn't play at all. So that's $10 million each about. So again, you know, a team that was just written off from the beginning by so many people that said, no, I think we're still going to have a shot. We're not going to blow this up. We're not going to trade all our veterans. We're going to keep as many of these guys that have championship experience together, playoff experience together. I mean, that's what this team has looked like, a team that has continued to believe in itself. Every time it got knocked down, it refused to give up, and at the end of the day, they're still standing.
All right, should we do your picks? Are you okay with this if we do them?
Yeah, bring it on.
All right. Who wins, Detroit or Tampa Bay?
I mean, my head says Detroit, my heart says the Bucs, obviously. I think that it should be a close game. It should be a well-matched game. I think my head would give the edge to Detroit because they'll be at home, and I think they're the more balanced. They've been the more consistent team in all three phases all year, and I think Dan Campbell's coached his ass off this year. I think he's a fantastic head coach. But if the Bucs play like they did last night, I think they're going to give them a run for their money. So obviously I'll be pulling for the Bucs, hoping they pull it off. If they don't, there are worse things than losing to the Lions and letting the Lions go to the NFC Championship. Like, you know, the part of me that would almost feel guilty if the Bucs win this game and upset the Detroit Magic that's happening up there. Not really.
No.
But,
no.
You know, there's a shot, man. Again, I'll be pulling for the Bucs. I won't be surprised if Detroit pulls it out because I do think they're the more complete, more consistent team. But hopefully we get a good one.
Think about this with Detroit. All right, so they won a playoff game. Still, what is it, 60, 70 years? They've only won two playoff games.
The Bucs win them all the time.
The
Bucs have won six, I think, in the last 3 years. The only team that's won more is Kansas City.
Who wins, Niners or Packers?
I still think San Francisco wins. I know Green Bay's playing really well right now, but I don't trust their defense against Kyle Shanahan. And again, they'll be healthy, rested, a couple of weeks to prepare. I trust the best team in the NFC, and I think that's still San Francisco right now, especially at home.
But if Green Bay wins, would you be shocked?
No, not at all. Again, it doesn't matter what you've done if you don't do it again for those 60 minutes, right? And that applies to Green Bay as well. It doesn't matter what they did in Dallas if they don't keep that rolling and keep playing like that in San Francisco. They're still going to get beat. So every team has got to show up for that 60 minutes or nothing that happened up to that point matters.
All right, let's go to the AFC. Here at Lou Gieseling with Athlon Sports. Appreciate coming on all year round. Okay. Who do you like, Ravens or Texans?
Man, I think that's going to be a really good one. I'm still going to go with Baltimore because I think, again, more complete on both sides of the ball. And I'll go with the experience of Lamar Jackson and what he brings over again, as impressive a rookie quarterback and rookie head coach as we've ever seen, maybe in D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud. But at home, and again, I think they're just a more complete team as well.
And then the one in Buffalo, Bills or Chiefs?
I mean, I think the Bills. I think the Bills are going to have the home crowd behind them. I think they're finally finding their footing a bit. And I think Kansas City really beat Miami when Miami showed up and the weather was what it was. I really don't think Kansas City is a great football team right now. I think they're driven by the defense as much as anything right now. And I think that even with all their injuries, I think Buffalo is a more hot team. And I think, again, having that home crowd behind them is going to make a big difference.
It's so wild, dude. It really is. Oh, I got something to tell you. The Panthers also gave the Bears a 2025 second-round pick. Do you know this? It's unbelievable.
The gift that keeps on giving, my friend. Enjoy.
I saw it this morning, and I was like, wait, how many picks did they give them? What is happening here? All right, so here's what you do. So if you're Green Bay, so you draft a quarterback and then let him sit for 3 years to stew or to learn, and then they become the next great quarterback. Is that what you do if you're Green Bay?
I mean, you can't argue with the results, right? That seems to be the pattern, so why not keep doing it?
Did he turn into Aaron Rodgers all of a sudden in the pocket?
I mean, he always had the arm talent. It was never about that, and I think, again, he was the perfect type of prospect that you need to sit and wait and learn. And, again, say what you want about Aaron Rodgers off the field, but on the field, he's one of the most talented throwers of a football we've ever seen in the game, and again, manipulates defenders, uses the cadence, really, really smart player on the field in terms of being able to manipulate what's happening in front of him. So a great place to learn how to play quarterback. And when you've got that kind of arm talent, which Jordan Love always did, it was a perfect recipe, evidently.
It makes me sick to my stomach hearing what you just said, but I agree.
I know. It's the truth.
It's crazy to say. All right, what can we check out this week, buddy, for everything? I know you updated your draft. Anything, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, there's more teams that are in draft mode now, right? We just added another six. So come on over to the Athlon Sports for all the breaking news and analysis, and then you can go to SI.com/NFL/draft. I'm running all the draft content on this SI.com right now. I'll have a new mock draft up later this week on SI.com. Mm. And yeah, so if you're out of it, don't worry. I got you covered with the draft stuff.
What time did you go to bed last night?
I have no idea, Mark. I don't remember.
I didn't.
Does it really matter? I don't think it does.
No, I went to bed about late. I went to bed at like 1:30 in the morning, and I'm thinking like, yeah. And by the way, like I had all these Buccaneer fans just like you, like incoherent texts of "Let's go, bleep, bleep, bleep."
It's beautiful.
Great stuff, man. Have a great day. Okay.
You too, Mark. Take care, man.
Awesome stuff.